crazy. Some say it's known that the seeds she has sown are magic. Her flowers bloom in the junkyard. She brews her houseplants for tea. This is Gram's Legacy.
Well, good evening and welcome, friends, to Voices of the Sacred Feminine. Whether you're across town or across the globe, I'm Karen Tate, and tonight's musical offering opening the show was called Gram's Song, which seems to still be playing there. Let me see. Okay, there, now it stopped. A wonderful song, Gram's Song, written by our guest tonight, Jean Prevette Sable, who's going to discuss GMOs working against Mother Nature. In other words, what's wrong with industrial-scale biotech agriculture and how it hurts Gaia, our planet, our mother. Let me tell you a bit about Jean before I share some new announcements with you. Jean, well, she's a freelance journalist specializing in farming and environmental issues, local food production and gardening. She serves as advisor to the nonprofit Sustainability Project. She's secretary of a town conservation commission and columnist for the Monadnock Table. She's going to have to help me with that one. An organic farmer and former newspaper editor, she has numerous articles published in local, regional, and national publications, and she's written educational environmental scripts for children's television, live puppet theater, and environmental web pages. Jean's also an accomplished singer-songwriter, as you've heard, whose lyrics mirror the topics about which she's most passionate, and her novel, Seed Keepers of Crescentville, published in 2005, was written in an effort to increase public awareness of the risks associated with genetically modified organisms, such as GMOs, and irresponsible biotech agriculture. Many issues brought to light in this work of fiction are now making the news. So we're going to be talking about her book as well as how the content of her book is actually playing out there in our lives. And I'm going to close the show tonight with another of Jean's songs called Giving It Back. But that snippet you heard of Gram's Song, that was just a one-time thing. So I hope you enjoyed it. The part of it we had time to play. But before we get to this important subject of GMOs, I have some new news and a promise to keep. The new news is, thanks to a listener by the name of Penny, thank you, Penny, you can now get Voices of the Sacred Feminine on iTunes. Here's how. You simply open the iTunes store. The search box is in the upper right-hand corner. Enter either my name, Karen Tate, or Voices of the Sacred Feminine in the search box. The show comes up. The show comes right up, and the episodes are all right there for downloading, and there's a button for subscribing to the podcast there as well. Okay? So, let me know how that goes for you, if that makes it easier to listen to the show. And again, thanks, Penny. I always appreciate it when listeners participate and contribute to the show. And a promise I gladly keep, I have been keeping for months, and I will continue to keep it for a bit longer into June, in honor of Keith Olbermann of Countdown fame on MSNBC, who we now know will be back around the 20th of June as the new news director on Al Gore's Current TV. Well, I'll ask the question I know Keith would have been asking every night to Mr. Boehner, that Republican, the one who's leading the Republicans in the House. Well, Mr. Boehner, where are the jobs? You acted so concerned, and so did all your cronies, or so you told the voters, to get elected. But, you know, you've really pulled a bait and switch, haven't you, Mr. Boehner? Your budget would cut jobs. The tax cuts you've blackmailed Democrats into have made the rich richer and have cut important programs for the poor, literally taking food out of the mouths of children. And aren't you the Family Values Party, or are you only concerned with babies when they're still in the womb and quickly forget them once they're born? You and your cronies have tried to pass more than 900 bills just since November, denying women's rights to their bodies and rights to equal pay. But we aren't taking it lying down, are we, Mr. Boehner? I think you've all miscalculated. You thought Fox News had duped all the people. Well, not all of us. Pretty soon, Wisconsin is going to recall those Republicans denying worker rights. Michigan is working on fixing what you've broken. We just showed you yesterday in New York, an area so red a Democrat could never win it before. But win it we did, thanks to your arrogance and overreach. You've exposed your callous and carelessness, Mr. Boehner. We know who you are, we know who you care about, and it's not the people. More and more, we're seeing your grand old plutocracy for what it is, and I think you're going to pay for it in 2012. All right, some other new timely developments. Next week, I will be in Wisconsin at the retreat sponsored by Gaia's Womb called The Sacred Feminine, Changing the Paradigm. I'll be there all weekend, but my formal presentation is Saturday when I'm presenting a workshop called Living the Sacred Feminine Lifestyle from Patriarchy to Partnership. If you're in the Wisconsin area around Racine, I believe, you can go to this website and get more information. I'm sure you can probably still sign up for the day or for the weekend. It's Gaia's Womb. GAIASWOMB.com. Now in their 13th year, Gaia's Womb calls forth the Woman Tribe to gather at the Gateway to Summer for a very special weekend retreat. Join us as we bring together two dynamic presenters. I'm one, I love how they describe me, that was awfully nice, and the other is Judika Isles. Let's see what else. I also want to tell you that I have a new offer here on the show, and I want to thank Dharma, another of my listeners, for this great idea. Instead of just asking for donations or contributions to help me keep paying for the airtime here on Blog Talk, yes, it's not free anymore, but I continue to do this as a service to the community and pay for the airtime myself, I'm now going to give listeners a free gift if you help support the show. If you send in a contribution of $100, I'll send you my 3-CD set of radio shows when I was on CBS discussing with other goddess advocates sacred places of goddess around the world, and some other gifts as well that will accompany the 3-CD set. You can get this nowhere but directly from me. Those interviews do not live in any archives on the internet anywhere. And if you donate less than $100, I'll send you one CD of those sacred places with an assortment of, you know, other little thank you gifts. So, and if you'd like to do that, you can go to my website, KarenTate.com, and on the page that says Goddess Store, there are PayPal buttons. You can make a donation of any amount, and I'll be happy to send along the free thank you gifts. Let's see. All right, the deadline to sign up to come on the sacred journey I'm organizing to Turkey, visiting sacred sites of goddess there in Anatolia, land of the nourishing mothers. Well, the deadline is June 15th. We're going to be seeing the goddess in her many guises, Isis, Kubaba, Aphrodite, Mary, Artemis, Magna Mater. So if you've been thinking about it, the time has come to act to secure your place on the tour. And this is for women and men. Really, don't delay any longer because the deadline is just a few weeks away. So if you'd like to give yourself something meaningful, if you have been feeling the call for a sacred journey to satisfy your mind, body, soul, go to my website, KarenTate.com, and you can find out where to sign up. There's a link there that will take you directly to the tour organizer who's handling the sign-ups. The itinerary's there, the price is there, and if you have any questions at all, please don't hesitate to email me at KarenTate108@ca.rr.com. Now, I also want to make sure you're aware that Monday, the 30th, Memorial Day, on a special day, Renee Barrett, filmmaker of the docudrama Bloodline. He's going to update us on new revelations about the bloodline of Jesus and Mary Magdalene. That's his specialty. You may have seen his documentary that was out a few years ago about finding the Templar grave in southern France. Some interesting stuff. So be with us on Monday. And then on June 1st, on the new moon, I'll have a double feature for you in that same week. My regular show on Wednesday will feature Rachel Tabachik. She's going to be here with me discussing Sarah Palin's church and their battle with the Queen of Heaven, or Goddess. And at the bottom of the show that week, Charlene Spretnak, foremother of Goddess Spirituality, will be discussing how and why there's so much friction among certain Christian groups about Mary, the mother of Jesus. Then June 8th, Jean Shinoda Bolen, I'm sure you recognize her name. She'll be here discussing her brand new book, which is called Like a Tree. And then on June 15th, Lee Burton will be with me discussing Christian fundamentalism in the Air Force. So don't forget, if you're listening live and want to call in and talk to my fabulous guest or myself, the number is 718-766-4662. I know most of you listen from the archives, but if you want to call in when I see you on the switchboard, I'll get to you when we have a lapse in the conversation, and I'll invite you to make your comment or ask your question, and I'll identify you by your area code. So let's delay no further because we have a lot to get to. Let me welcome Jean Privette Sable to the show. Hi, Jean.
Hi, Karen.
So did I get your name right? Jean Privette?
That's right. That's
Sable, great, great. And when I was reading your bio, you're a columnist for the Monadnock Table?
Yes, the Monadnock Table. Monadnock is the name of a mountain close by here in New Hampshire.
Okay,
so
all right.
That region is called the Monadnock region, and it's a publication about local foods, eating local healthy food.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, Jean, I thought it was so important to have you on the show because I think probably a lot of us, especially those of us in the city that don't really get our hands dirty in the dirt, you know, maybe we haven't been following too much what's been going on out there in terms of what do they call it, Big Agri? Is that the name for the agricultural community?
Yeah, I've been calling it Big Ag or Big Bio. It's just a nickname. I don't know what they call themselves.
Okay. Well, you know, let's start at the top and don't be afraid to keep some of these concepts simple for people who are maybe just hearing about this for the first time. Mm-hmm. Let's start with what we mean by GMOs.
All right. Well, that just stands for genetically modified organism, and it's kind of a broad term so that we can cover not only food products but cotton, which, you know, fiber plants or even bacterium or whatever it is that they're crossing. So a genetically modified organism is something that has come from a seed where the genetic material of a very unrelated organism has been injected into the chromosome of that particular crop or plant that they intend to grow. So they've taken a gene or genes from one life form and forced it into a completely unrelated life form, crossing not only the natural barriers between species, but often crossing into whole classes of organisms, or even crossing the line between kingdoms, as in between the animal kingdom and the plant kingdom.
Can you give us an example?
Well, yes. Putting mouse genes into apples. We can talk about that later.
Okay, because I'm going to need to know why they would do such a thing. But, give us some of these examples so we really know what you're talking about.
Okay. One of the early experiments was with a tomato, and I believe they had injected genetic material from a flounder fish into the chromosomes of these tomato seeds, so that I guess the idea was that the tomatoes would be more frost resistant. They were going for some trait that the flounders have that keeps them from freezing in very frigid temperatures. So I guess that's what they were going for.
Did that really go well?
I think it was on the market actually for a short time, and it, because of the taste, it didn't fly.
Interesting.
But that was very early on.
Now, when we're walking through the grocery store, do we know when the produce has been genetically modified?
No, we'll get into that too. But that's a major issue because they are not labeled. They are not required to be labeled. And the only assurance we have now, as long as we keep our organic standards pretty rigid, we can depend on the fact that if it's grown organically, that it cannot contain GMOs. And we can get into that later, too, as far as what ingredients to watch out for to make sure that those are organic.
Okay. Well, I don't mean to throw you a curve here. So if you're not sure, that's okay. But I saw a YouTube video that was taken right here in Venice, California, where I am, of an organic food mart that was busted by the Justice Department because they were selling raw food. And it's almost unbelievable, but is there some sort of movement afoot to stop people from having access to organic foods?
Not that I'm aware of, unless the product was a raw dairy product.
Well, there was some raw dairy, but it wasn't just that. I mean, it was produce and everything, and it seemed, the people seemed really reasonable, and the people busting them, it just felt like Big Brother kind of a thing.
Wow.
And it made you really think, well, what's going on out there? I mean, has Big Ag gotten so powerful that they're trying to put little, organic farmers out of business and little organic markets out of business?
Well, they certainly are trying in many ways. I'm not sure exactly what might have been going on there, unless there was something, there could have been something about organic produce that perhaps, I mean, just giving them the benefit of the doubt, which I don't know why I'm doing this, but I'm just thinking that perhaps if produce was grown organically, that maybe there had been manure applied more recently than the 60 days that is supposed to be the waiting period between applying manure to raw produce that will be eaten. That's about the only thing I can think of. And the other thing is raw dairy, because there are some very stringent rules about that, which are also ridiculous, but they are in effect. And there are restrictions about who can sell raw dairy under what circumstances. So that's all
okay.
I can tell you.
Okay, all right. Well, let's get into your background a little bit, because, well, you know so much about this. I mean, you come at it not just as a researcher, but also you get your hands dirty. I mean, you're a farmer. You write about it. You know about food production, gardening, everything. And so you took all of that and you put it in your book. So tell us a little bit about the book and yourself. Just sort of weave that tapestry for us.
Okay. Well, basically, I started with just being a kitchen gardener, not really much beyond that, just trying to raise enough produce for the family and to maybe extend it into to the winter. We have a pretty short growing season here. And and I'd been doing that for many years and totally organically. And I was always amazed at how bountiful nature really is. And so, I really didn't know anything about any of this until in the late 1990s, I began reading about what was then called genetic use restriction technology seeds. And that became nicknamed the Terminator seed. And I don't know if you'd heard about that. But
no.
Well, these were patented seeds, genetically engineered so that the plants that they produced could not yield viable seeds for later plantings. So this was being commercialized worldwide through international trade agreements, and these seeds could force farmers anywhere to purchase or lease the seed year after year from the same company, rather than save their own as they had always done. So actually, Monsanto Company was seeking USDA approval for this Terminator gene, but actually withdrew its application in response to a big outcry in 1999. But, you know, the movie that Arnold Schwarzenegger made popular in 1984, called The Terminator, it really had nothing to do with this. But I remember that line in The Terminator where Schwarzenegger said, I'll be back. And it just occurred to me, they're not going to give up on this technology. They will be back. And that's kind of what I based the book on.
The logic there, Jean, tell me if I'm wrong. Understanding from you is if they force that on farmers everywhere, then the farmers will become a slave to the corporation. Basically, they won't be independent.
Basically, yes, that's really it. And so I just figured they would sugarcoat the name, or maybe just drop the name and not even focus on it, but. That was the main premise of the story that I wrote the novel about, and I just felt that I had to write it because the thought of defeating the natural gift of abundance just seemed unconscionable to me. So, and their motive was clearly just to maximize profits from seed sales, and not only seed sales, but all the chemicals that these genetically engineered crops were designed to work in tandem with. It's really amazing the way they've done this, so that the seeds really depend on these chemicals. They turn them on, they turn them off. But besides that, the idea of ultimately gaining control of our food supply was really the kicker.
This might sound paranoid, but if we had some kind of crazy upheaval across the globe and, say, one country depended on food from another country, that country could literally starve that country to death. I mean,
it's not extreme at all. It's really getting very close to that, I'm sorry to say. I came up with a little proverb that I've been saying, and that's, whosoever owns the seeds owns the food and those it feeds. Mm-hmm. And you're right. When your guest, Marguerite Rigoloso, I hope I'm pronouncing her name properly.
That's close enough. Rigoglioso.
Rigoglioso. When she stated on your show recently that genetic engineering is a taking of maternal values, that really resonated with me. It really made sense how violated I felt when I started to learn about all this. And of course, once I decided I had to write about it, then I really had to learn a lot more about it. But the way I'm seeing it right now, I hope that the listeners can kind of follow this. But if you look at a cellular level, we look at a human sperm cell. And we see, these tiny cells, they're released in vast numbers. Each one goes racing against its peers you know, in order to reach the prize, which would be the egg for fertilization. And in order to do this, it first must it must venture outside the host, which is the man's body, and find its way into a separate organism, the female. And then it must contend under enormous competition and against tremendous odds and be the first to reach and fertilize the ovum. I'm probably not the first person saying this, but on a larger scale, it's easy to recognize this mode of behavior. If you're in a male-dominated society, you know, which values speed and competition and invasiveness and conquest,
mm-hmm.
these are the values that drive the corporate model.
Mm-hmm.
So corporate takeovers achieved by driving the competition under and invading foreign territories, overtaking another's resources, changing them over to the dominant company's own purpose or advantage, that's the corporate model. And going back to the cellular level, again, if we look at the egg as symbolic of all that is maternal, we see that it maintains residence within its original hostess, the mother. And if fertilization takes place, the egg grows quietly from within, from the center, like a seed, taking nourishment freely on site. So even after new life emerges, nearly all higher life forms cling to their mother for nourishment. You know, mammals find milk right nearby in their mother's breasts, and how miraculous is that?
So it's almost like you're comparing, and really this is an interesting parallel. I hadn't thought about this. And so what you're saying is you're looking at paternal versus maternal. Maternal is sort of self-sufficient unto itself, not
yes.
aggressive. You know, it doesn't reach beyond its borders, where
mm-hmm.
the paternal is, you know, the one that, you know, that's going out beyond its environment, having to, you know, dominate and infiltrate. And so that's the genetically modified seed taking over maybe the indigenous local seeds. Is that sort of
right.
where we're going?
Well, we're going there, and we're also saying on a larger scale, the whole factory farm idea, as opposed to many small-scale farms throughout, evenly distributed throughout the a region. To just take it a little farther here, what I was kind of getting at is, okay, so we know that the egg grows from within like a seed, and it's taking its nourishment freely on site. And then after new life emerges, then nearly all higher life forms, they still stay pretty close to home. They're gradually expanding into the community as they hunt for food and such. But the idea is the nourishment comes freely on site and then grows gradually so that everybody has access. I don't know if that's kind of, if that's at all clear what I'm trying to say, but you know, when you see a chicken or whatever teaching its young to peck food or hunt, you see they begin to integrate with the surrounding plant and animal community. This would be like a small-scale farm just growing enough to feed the surrounding community. So what I'm saying is that nature provides nourishment up close and personal, from the center, slowly spreading outward, and it's a very orderly, balanced fashion. It keeps it food accessible to all.
Okay.
And we're meant to be surrounded by what nourishes us, and the business of providing nourishment is clearly in the feminine domain. And I trust in the ability of the earth to provide all that we need.
Mm-hmm.
Just as nursing mothers know, all they really have to do is relax and the milk will flow. I mean, that's not to say that that farming is easy, but we don't have to alter life genetically at a cellular level, nor do we have to grab land way beyond our reach and convert it to vast areas of monoculture plantings in order to meet our nutritional needs.
Well, Jean, let me ask you this. I mean,
mm-hmm.
obviously their goal is the bottom line, greed. You know, they're
right.
not thinking so much about tomorrow. They're thinking about fast money right now.
Mm-hmm.
But how do they, I mean, do they give some sort of justification for the damage they're potentially doing, these environments that they're, you know, that they're hurting? I mean, do they say, well, you know, it's so that we won't be able to feed the world if we don't do
that's
this?
That's exactly. Yes, that's exactly what they say. That it's all poor, helpless us. We need them. They want us to feel that we absolutely can't do this without them. And you know,
well, why are so many people going to bed hungry then? I mean, in third world countries, I mean, there isn't fresh water for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to bed hungry. They obviously aren't distributing very well. If you know, this is the answer.
Well, the problem in many cases is that areas where they have done these big land grabs and they've taken over. Let me just go a little further here. In China and other rapidly developing nations, now even right now they're taking over huge tracts of land from small countries in Africa and elsewhere. They're using these international trade agreements that allow them to just come in and grow food for themselves, not to help the people in the countries that they're growing the food.
So they're taking it back home to China.
Yes, yes. And they're often using, or they are using, these one-size-fits-all factory farming methods that work right along with the genetically engineered seeds and chemicals. And so here they are invading a foreign territory. They're using up local water sources. I understand the Nile is really taking a hit from this. And they're using these resources to benefit them or the larger nations. And at the same time, on this cellular level, here they are forcing genes of totally unrelated species into the genetic blueprint of these major food crops. And they're changing them irrevocably and claiming these breeds as their own because the seeds are patented. It's just plunder. Indigenous populations lose the biodiversity that once helped feed them, and we all lose food security whenever we are separated from our food sources by hundreds or thousands of miles.
Right,
so it's
right.
It's terribly imbalanced, and you know, the whole idea of these huge factory farms sequestering all the people in cities and residential neighborhoods, many that were previously agricultural lands, and here they live without access to truly fresh food, and they're nutritionally stranded. And furthermore, then we have to depend upon fuel, which is another assault to Mother Earth, for the food to even reach them. So by the time the food gets to many people, the life force in many cases has gone out of the food.
I see what you're saying. And I mean, I remember reading something about down in Mexico, they were really trying hard to resist, I think, Monsanto coming down there with some sort of genetically modified corn that was somehow hurting the indigenous corn crops.
Oh, absolutely, because corn is an open pollinating crop. The wind blows and the pollen drifts, and it's very hard nowadays to find any corn that has not been contaminated by GMOs. It's a widespread problem, and in Mexico in particular, where there are very specific strains of corn, different varieties growing in different localities where they've really, over the centuries, through careful selective breeding that has nothing to do with GMO, they have selectively bred for local conditions, weather conditions, insect populations, even the tastes of the indigenous people, what they like to eat, what they their traditional foods are, and so they've got these perfect types of corn that they've developed over centuries, and now all of a sudden they're ruined. They're ruined forever because it's in the blueprint now of these. It's right in the genes.
It's almost like a plague in a way that sort of infiltrates the land and sort of just takes it over, and then you can't go back. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. So, you know, it's ridiculous. We speak of a nation's breadbasket, and you know, as if one region can be dedicated to growing food, but I think of it more in terms of what we need to do is have many evenly distributed small so-called baskets with a variety of offerings, the best of each locale's fare, you know, evenly distributed with, you know, nutritious food of all different types, whatever grows best.
Well, now, do we know if this, this GMO produce, is it as nutritious as the non-GMO food, or is it, I guess that's my question.
Probably not, because the main reason that right now the vast majority of plants that are growing from genetically engineered seeds have been they've been altered so that they can withstand huge doses of an herbicide called glyphosate, and so what we have are these fields where they can just be doused everywhere with this herbicide, and the only plants that survive are the GMO ones because they've got the resistance to that herbicide. So, and we know that they're, in fact, I can get into this later about how deficient the soils become when they're heavily treated with chemicals over and over again. And there are very specific new findings with regard to glyphosate that's very scary.
Well, you know, from everything you're saying, it doesn't sound like there's an upside to these GMOs. I mean, they're ruining the soil. They got these,
right.
You know, they're going outside their countries where they're grabbing land, destroying the indigenous, the indigenous people's land, probably polluting water. You know, like you said, the diversity is being ruined, which hurts us down the road in terms of, you know, food sustainability and stuff like that. I mean, it's not as nutritious. It doesn't probably taste as good. They're probably poisoning us. You know, is there any upside to any of this?
I really don't see it. I don't think so at all. What it boils down to is we are ingesting these poisons, we're contaminating our environment with pesticides and herbicides, and we're subjecting ourselves to very unnatural and grossly under-tested technologies simply to increase the market share for these massive biotech seed and chemical corporations. And they would have us believe that we need them to feed us, and they'll tell you all kinds of things that you know, they're working on rice that contains vitamin A because there's such a deficiency of vitamin A in third world populations and this and that. But they're not getting their vitamin A because their land has been taken over by cotton and corn and things that don't provide vitamin A.
Right,
they used
right.
to grow it.
Well, is anybody fighting back in any meaningful way against this, or is it, you know, or are we just succumbing to this insanity?
Well, we're fighting back. I think I think the best way that we're fighting back is with what we buy at the supermarket. I can give you some tips on how to shop so that you're refusing GMOs. Europe has been pretty successful in refusing to accept GMOs, and we've been pretty, for some reason, we've been lax at that. But let me just.
Well, is Monsanto, I always hear Monsanto, like they're the devil. Are they the people doing this, or are they only one corporation, multinational corporation doing this?
They're the big ones. There are probably five major ones at this point, but they are certainly at the top. It's amazing what they're doing. I don't know how much time we're going to have to get into it, but how are we doing on time?
We probably have about 20 minutes left.
Okay. All right. Well, let me get to some of what I was going to say about one thing that's happening. Super weeds are cropping up now because of this herbicide resistance that I was telling you about. This has crossed with wild plants, and so now we're getting super weeds that don't respond to herbicides, and they're now breeding on their own, and they're making new genetic combinations that have never happened in nature. So that's one thing that's happening. And so what is the corporate solution? What they want, what they're doing, is a lot like what the pharmaceutical industry does. They release a drug that causes severe side effects, and then so then they just, oh well, we'll make a new drug that will counteract that, and then we'll make another one, on and on. Well, now there's some research going on to introduce foreign genes into a different part of the plant, one that doesn't produce pollen. So we won't create the problem anymore of the pollen drift, but what are they doing now but tinkering with what makes plants green, because they're putting the GMOs, the genetically engineered material, into the part of the plant, the cells that create photosynthesis. So this is their solution. And like, we'll pollute your land, but then we'll sell you this new risky product that will take care of the problem.
Jesus. You know, it reminds me of the military-industrial complex. Let's sell you bullets and bombs so you can destroy a city. Then let's privatize war so we can be the ones taking care of the soldiers while they occupy the city as we rebuild it. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's like here they're creating problems, you know, almost so that they can also charge you for the solutions. I mean, BP did that, with the Corexit. You know, they caused the problem, and then we were buying the Corexit from them to disperse the oil. I mean, this is insane.
It's totally insane. I know you earlier. You asked about the apple, so I want to make sure I get to that.
Yeah. So why are they putting mouse genes in apples?
The latest thing coming down the pike seems to be apples that have been crossed with a bacterium and a gene from a mouse. Now, I don't know what particular trait they were going for here, but somehow it's supposed to have an effect of, so that apples don't turn brown. Now, they're thinking they can make us believe, that they're doing that for us. It's so amazing because, the apple is so symbolic. I mean, even in the beginning of your show, I noticed you have the picture of Eve with the apple coming down. And, there's Adam and Eve, there's the mom and apple pie, and now here they are messing with apples. But according to this article that I read, they're being genetically engineered with this bacterium and the mouse gene. to prevent them from turning brown, and of course any cook knows how to keep apples from turning brown. You don't cut them way ahead of time, and if you do, you sprinkle them with lemon juice or vinegar. But I think what's really happening here is they want to sell these huge fast food restaurant chains all these children's meals that they want to look like they're healthy. So
fresh,
they contain apples. They contain these old cut-up apples that are turning brown because they're not fresh.
Yeah.
And so this is their solution. And they're telling us, oh, you don't want your apples turning brown. We're gonna fix that for you.
Well, and you know, and I wonder too, Jean, since you said that, it made me think of something. You know, I rarely ever get a salad in any of these fast food hamburger joints because
the
couple, they have no taste. I mean, so that's not just me, right? I mean, they literally have no taste.
They have no taste.
So that's probably
what passes for healthy. It's not what's actually good for us or our children. And we've been eating GMO corn, canola, soy, and cottonseed oil, most of us unknowingly, for a couple of decades now. And that's the real insidious part. I mean, these ingredients, they slip them in without any labeling to almost all of the processed foods that we buy. And we are so addicted, really, to convenience that we grab these things and we don't realize that they have them. And I mentioned the main ones: corn, canola, soy, cottonseed, and soon we have to watch out for genetically engineered sugar beets. Which anything that says sugar, if it doesn't say cane sugar, then we have to be suspicious that perhaps, or most likely, it'll be coming from sugar beets, which are now being genetically engineered. So I think that's going to be next on the horizon.
Somebody
That'll
told
be in
me
all the candy and the soft drinks. And
somebody told me recently that one of the artificial sweeteners, and I don't know if it was Splenda or not. She said she thought it was Splenda. But one of the artificial sweeteners was actually a pesticide that they realized tasted sweet. Excuse me. So they actually started selling it as an artificial sweetener. Is that true? Do you know?
I'm not sure if the original application was that it was a pesticide, but I know that it was a chemical in the laboratory that the technician accidentally licked his finger after touching it, and it was the byproduct of a genetically engineered substance. So it was actually the secretions of this genetically engineered organism, and this person tasted it, and it's sweet and it has no calories. Well, we can do a lot with that.
Was it Splenda? Do you know?
Well, I think Splenda and many of the artificial sweeteners have this in it. I'm blanking out on the name of it now. I know we've all seen it.
Asperia, what's the blue pack? The blue pack, the yellow pack, the pink pack.
But I'm talking about the main ingredient. I think it starts with an A.
Aspartame?
Aspartame, yes.
Aspartame.
You're pronouncing it correctly. I've read it and I maybe have not heard it spoken, but yes, I call it aspartame. Maybe it's aspartame. Did you say aspartame?
I don't know
anyway,
now.
Yes.
This is a byproduct of that?
That is the substance that you have to, that you should avoid if you want to avoid GMOs, and they're horrible. There are horrible health problems that have been, attributed to that. So,
Well, Jean, the artificial sweeteners, we've heard a lot about them being dangerous, but let's think about the fruits and vegetables, I guess, or if there's other things in the grocery store we have to avoid. What are the best and easiest things for us to do to limit our intake of this?
Well, look for corn, canola, cottonseed, or soy in the ingredients. And if those items are there, make sure they're labeled organic. If they're not, and it's a product you really like, get that 800 number that's often on the package and call that company and say, look, unless I see non-GMO listed next to those ingredients, or I see that your product is made organically and all these ingredients are organic, I'm not going to buy that product anymore. So it's a matter of looking for the main ones. As far as produce, there aren't that many right now foods that you would pick up in a bin or such at a grocery store that are GMO. Some of them are, but by far the biggest, the way they snuck them in is by putting them in these small amounts in the packages. And now they can say, oh, you've been eating that for years and you didn't know it, and then there's not one instance of illness or sickness or death or anything. And that's really not true. I highly recommend Jeffrey M. Smith's books. He's got one called Genetic Roulette, and it... Or Seeds of Deception is another good one that he wrote. But he mentions tryptophan back as early as 1988. They were experimenting with a genetically modified supplement, and tryptophan is the stuff that that makes you sleepy after a turkey dinner.
Right, that's in turkey, yeah.
Yeah, and they were putting this in, you know, making a some kind of a supplement out of it, I don't know, for relaxation or something. And there were many people died from that. Looking for my notes now on that. But
so are we safest if we can afford it? Because I know it definitely costs more money, and, you know, even non-organic food has gotten so expensive. But are we really safest getting our food at an organic grocery?
I think we are, and I think the more we give in to buying it, then the prices will start to go down. But we also have to fight this thing, you know, other than just giving in and buying organic. We should insist that these things be labeled. And
well, is anything going on in Congress right now, to fight this? I mean, you know, I haven't heard anything in the news, and I listen pretty closely,
yeah,
because, you know, I'm a political activist, and I'm just outraged with things that Republicans are trying to do people today, and I don't really hear any legislation about food.
It's very difficult now because agricultural department is infiltrated now by people from Big Ag. So everybody's saying, rah-rah, let's do the GMOs. But let me see. I had something here about some legislation. Let's see. Yeah, some farmers, there was a lawsuit filed, this was dated March 30th, 2011, where a group of farmers filing to protect themselves from unfair patent enforcement on genetically modified seeds. So in other words, one thing we didn't get into is the fact that so many farmers are being sued, and they deny this too. Big biotech is denying this, and they're getting away with denying it because these farmers lose when the patented seeds are traced to their property, whether or not they intentionally planted them. If their plants get accidentally contaminated by drifting pollen or some seeds that were somehow brought in by animals or birds onto their farmland, and they're growing now these patented crops, and they don't have their they didn't get the clearance to plant these patented seeds, they get sued, even though they didn't intentionally do it. Their land gets polluted, but they get sued, and they always lose. So when they try to settle, they're settling under a big gag order. And so there's only one or two people that this has happened to who are going around telling their story and can do that, and one of them is a very courageous canola farmer from Canada named Percy Schmeisser, and that's an amazing story if you get a chance to read what's happened to him. He's in his 80s now.
Say his name again.
His name is Percy Schmeisser. It's S-C-H-M-E-I-S-E-R. And
okay.
He actually, I dedicated my book to him. He has been fighting this all around the world. Monsanto sued him actually more than once, and he's telling his story like it is. There's a very good clip on Democracy, Voice of Democracy, I believe it's called, where they interview him and he tells the whole story, and it's scary when you hear what happened to him.
Wow. We're coming toward the end of the show, Jean. Is there anything? I mean, I know we could talk about this even more, but anything that pops out in your mind, maybe most important, you think listeners, you know, really should know that maybe we haven't talked about yet.
What they should know. Read ingredients. That's the biggest thing I can say. And make it clear that you don't want these. And find out about.
Should we be writing our congresspeople about this?
Oh,
or?
Yes, please. Yes, absolutely. Anybody that will listen, it's got to be a very big outcry.
Now, do you have a website that talks about any of this that would, like, if you needed to know the jargon, for instance, if you were going to write a letter to your congressperson or write a letter to the editor,
yes,
or, you know, gather up your friends, is there a place to
yes,
tell
the list? The best place to go is if you Google or just search for the Institute for Responsible Technology.
Okay.
And that's Jeffrey M. Smith, who wrote this genetic roulette book that I mentioned, and he's the one who really just first brought all of this to light. He exposes all of the botched testing that was covered up in the early stages of this, and some of the very shocking results of the testing that on animals, rats, that should have been a real red flag that everybody chose to ignore. He has brought all this to light, and he started this organization called the Institute for Responsible Technology. And the other thing I would say is the Organic Consumers Association has been very active, and they will send you bulletins. They will tell you how you can fight back, anything you want to do, from very minor things to actual, you know, being quite active in the whole thing.
Well, I know people who say Obama should get that Monsanto guy off of some board, you know, so even right the White House.
Yeah.
You know, is that in fact true? Monsanto was on Obama's some high up board,
yeah,
or something.
And there are many people that you know were very big movers and shakers in the whole GMO industry, and they are now on the USDA, and it's not a pretty picture.
So, Jean, if you're a beginner, gardener, farmer, whatever you want to call it, let's call it gardener, and you've got a little patch in the backyard and you want to grow some of your own stuff, what's the easiest stuff to grow that, you know, you might get a sense of satisfaction, you know, not just getting your hands dirty and, you know, and connecting yourself to Mother Nature again and not, you know, getting to the point where we just don't totally rely on the grocery store. But, you know, what do you think would give some satisfaction, you know, an easy success for the first-time gardener?
I would say lettuce is a pretty sure bet. Of course, a lot depends on your locality. But I think, you know, especially if you have kids and you grow some lettuce and maybe some radishes because they come up very quickly.
Are tomatoes tough or
tomatoes
herbs?
Tomatoes are pretty good. You know, as long as you know if you're in a colder area like I am, you have to be a little careful of frost. But tomatoes are great. I would recommend tomatoes because especially where a lot of kids really like tomatoes, and that's a way that they can grow something that they're getting their, you know, vitamin C and vitamin A and a lot of good stuff from.
And what about a fruit tree? Does it take a long time for a tree to actually start making fruit?
Well, some it does. You wouldn't get the immediate, but it's a great project. You know, it really is, and it keeps giving. So.
Well, and I know one woman who was very interested in the goddess Demeter, who actually planted wheat and went through the whole life cycle of wheat because it was so connected to the rites and rituals of of the goddess Demeter and Persephone. So you really can sort of turn it into a sacred thing if you want to. You know, really just in how you look at it. It could be a good family activity as well as maybe save you some money. So if you are going to do something like that, how do you keep the bugs off if you don't want to use these dangerous herbicides?
You make sure that your soil is healthy as you can get it. You feed the earth. You don't poison it.
Okay.
Compost. Just keep turning things back, you know, into the soil. Replace everything you take out.
Is there a book out there that's something like Gardening for Dummies or Farming for Dummies?
There are so many. It wouldn't be hard at all to find something to get you started, and I would highly recommend that.
Well, Jean, I want to thank you for introducing my listeners to the problem of these genetically modified organisms. I mean, I didn't know a lot about it before tonight, but I think I have a much better handle to a certain extent on what's going on big picture-wise and why these things are really so dangerous, and like we said already, there doesn't seem to be an upside to this, mm-hmm. that we should really be assertively fighting against this with every breath in our body, because it could end up killing us. It seems.
Yes, there are some very scary developments on this front that I didn't get to yet, but yes.
Well, could you like
really,
in about 2 or 3 minutes, just sort of, maybe touch on those developments if you think we should know about it?
There's a recent discovery of a brand new organism that is making both plants and animals sick, which is very unusual, and it's been traced to that chemical glyphosate. And so all of the GMOs that are growing in tandem with the use of the they they're finding that this little microscopic it's part fungal and it's part let me just find I don't have time to find a note on it. I wish I
so it's affecting making plants and animals sick.
Yes.
And this is something that was created in the lab.
Yeah, a team of senior plant and animal scientists have recently brought to the attention of the discovery of an electron microscopic pathogen that appears to significantly impact the health of plants, animals, and probably human beings. And this is a highly respected specialist that came up with this. His name is he's the animal and plant science coordinator for the USDA National Plant Disease Recovery System. And he's an emeritus professor at Purdue University. His name is Don Huber. He's calling this an emergency. And the organism is something that's never been found before. It's prolific in plants infected with two pervasive diseases that are driving down yields and farmer income. Sudden death syndrome in soy and something else in corn. It's implicated in animal reproductive failure, lots of spontaneous abortions and infertility among livestock.
Wow.
This
very clearly shows us that this tampering with Mother Nature could end up starving us to death. I mean, we could literally destroy the food supply and the animals on the planet.
We could.
Well, I think probably that's all we have time for right now, Jean. But let me just read the synopsis of your book, Seed Keepers of Crescentville, because I know you've woven a lot of these issues into this book of fiction. And listeners, it sounds like a really interesting book, and this is the synopsis. The mysterious illness of a little girl rallies this organic Vermont farming community against the world's leading biotech agribusiness in a desperate attempt to safeguard the environment. Is it too late to preserve Crescentville's unique heritage of heirloom seeds and old-time breeds, and how hard must they fight? Sounds like a David and Goliath story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, Jean, thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show. I know we couldn't get to everything, but I think you really made the point that this is something we need to be paying attention to, fighting against, and maybe getting a little bit more independent in terms of growing some of our own food, and definitely we're not saving ourselves in the long run if we don't go to organic groceries, I don't think. I think we're almost taking our lives in our hands if we don't go to the organic grocery stores.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's, well, I'm sorry, I don't have time, but thank you so much. I really enjoyed talking to you, and I just hope that more people will start to look at this.
Okay. Well, I recommend they read your book. I'm sure that will, give them in an entertaining way more information about the subject, as well as go to a couple of those websites you mentioned. They can play our interview back to catch those and, maybe educate themselves a little bit more about what's going on. So who knows, maybe they'll start a letter-writing campaign in their communities, in their book clubs, in their churches, get a movement afoot to protect ourselves. I mean, that's basically what we're talking about here.
Yes, I certainly hope so.
All right. Well,
thank you so much.
Jean, well, thank you. Thank you for being on the show. I really appreciate all your work, and I'm sure we'll stay in touch.
Thank you so much.
Good night.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, if you're just tuning in, this is Karen Tate, hostess of Voices of the Sacred Feminine, where we discuss Goddess, the Divine Feminine, the resurging interest in right brain thinking, the feminine consciousness, Whether the great she be deity, archetype, or ideal, whether the great she be Mother Earth, as we were talking about tonight, and how she's being polluted and raped again in a still another way, and how these values that we hold so dear, these sacred feminine values, these environmental values, how these might just be benchmarks to save our world and humankind. You've been listening to Jean Privette Sable, and we've been talking about how genetically modified organisms hurt Mother Nature and human beings, and I thank her very much for educating us more on this subject. So, listeners, that sound marks our crossing the threshold into the bottom of the show. And I just would like to say for listeners who are getting to know me a bit better, I have 2 years of archived radio shows on my website, KarenTate.com. I used to be on Passionate Internet Voices Radio, where my show was only about 30 minutes, but we did some really wonderful shows, even in 30 minutes back then. Yep, they're right there and downloadable and free. I've had wonderful guests over the years. Before moving to Blog Talk, there is truly a treasure trove already there waiting for you to spend some time listening, and the topics are still relevant. They are still timely. They are not dated at all. And so many wonderful leaders and movers and shakers who have been working diligently for goddess ideals and to make the world a better place. And, you know, I have been here on Blog Talk over a year, maybe getting close to 2 years. There's a lot in the archives here as well. If you you just look back, and I encourage you to do so. I would also invite you to go to the media page of my website to catch radio interviews I was invited to do. I also have a YouTube channel where I have some wonderful videos. You'll see the Isis Temple of Thanksgiving, Sekhmet's Mountain Sanctuary, snippets of lectures including Goddess as a Democrat and Sacred Feminine for a Sustainable Future. And, you know, if you like free stuff, I have free downloadable meditations on my website as well. They are on the Goddess Store page. There's at least 3 or 4 for different times of the year and for different purposes. So check that out. And while you're there, please do look at the books that I've written. One is Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations, which has garnered some prestigious endorsements. Whether you're an armchair traveler or one who actually has a passport and gets out there and goes on sacred pilgrimages, you can use the book to actually do a West Coast pilgrimage, and there's a lot of other sites around the United States, goddess sites as well. And my second book, Walking Ancient Path, it was actually a finalist in the spirituality category in the 2008 awards. Take a look at that. It talks about goddess and the sacred feminine from a spiritual and, some have said, a socio-political look at how you incorporate the sacred feminine into your life individually and as a community. Well, tonight's evening prayer / poem, it's time for that. And I invite you to close your eyes and take a deep breath with me and bring an even deeper focus to these words of prayer. Let's start by shifting our focus. Take a deep breath and just sort of go within. Go to that place where we connect with the divine, our mother, our sacred self. This this poem prayer, it feels like it's both, that I'm going to read you tonight, was sent to me from Luna Press, and you can find out more about them at thelunapress.com. They put out these wonderful lunar calendars that make great and inexpensive holiday gifts. Anyway, they sent me this, and it was written by Sarah Furo, and it's titled Spring Signals. It goes like this. The sap rises as I walk through snowy trenches. I feel spring enter my feet, my legs, and clench my heart. Not only trees know when spring begins. Sleep has moved elsewhere. I turn with the moon and feel the thud and pound of new demands to bring forth. I know not what until it opens. I am building a nest and eating my way into birth, just like the mouse who gnaws on crackers in my kitchen cabinet, ready for a new litter of small, rosy, hairless children, babies who look like the swelling buds of the beech and the birch twigs, pussy willow infants. The red of the tree blood mixes with the white of the snow. Green moss is more powerful than the lacy ice coat she wears. All this as the lady smiles down while she performs in her theater of quiet but relentless change. That was by Sarah Furo. And you can get beautiful prayers, poetry like that from the Luna Press. And look them up. I think you will enjoy their lunar calendars and the other things they put out for the goddess community. Well, I'd like to say good night and thanks to my listeners for tuning in. Remember to be with me Monday on a special day, same time, 6 o'clock Pacific, when I'll have on the show filmmaker Renee Barrett, who made that docudrama Bloodline about the life of Mary Magdalene and the Templar graves in France. And he is going to catch us up on new developments since that documentary came out. Then again, that same week, on Wednesday, we're going to be talking about Sarah Palin's church at war with the Queen of Heaven and why Christians are fighting about Mary. Well, have a wonderful weekend. Be safe and use every opportunity at your disposal to be her sacred roar. And to close tonight, I am keeping a promise here to Jean. I am going to let you hear, closing out the show, her other song, if I can find it here on my list, and it's called Giving It Back. Here it is. So please enjoy this, and I hope you enjoyed the show tonight. And as I said, be her sacred roar, whatever that means, a political activist, an activist, you know, fighting to keep our food safe, fighting to keep our liberties in place, fighting for our social safety net. There's so much out there that really needs our protection, that really needs us to be active, to not be complacent. So please step up, be counted, be part of the solution. And here it is, Giving It Back by Jean Privette Saville.
treasures in her trunk the way some people do. The cast iron door to watch the